The Truth About College Admission podcast, as well as our book and workbook, are brought to you by Johns Hopkins Press. Visit press.jhu.edu to learn more about their wide selection of books and journals from the world's most trusted authors, experts, and sources. I am Brennan Barnard, one of your hosts. I'm the Director of College Counseling for Khan Schools Network and the College Admission Advisor for Macon Carey Common.
And I am Rick Clark. I am the Executive Director for Strategic Student Access and Enrollment Management at Georgia Tech.
This week, we are joined by Dr. Lisa Damore. Lisa is the author of three New York Times bestsellers, Untangled, Under Pressure, and her most recent, The Emotional Lives of Teenagers, which have been translated into 23 languages. She co-hosts the Ask Lisa podcast, works in collaboration with UNICEF, and is recognized as a thought leader by the American Psychological Association. Dr. Moore is a regular contributor to the New York Times and CBS News and the creator of Untangling 10 to 20, a digital library of premium content to support teens and those who care for them. It was a great conversation, Rick, and I'm sorry you couldn't join us, but I know you listened to the conversation, and she's just a really impressive, like I said, thought leader.
Yeah, for sure. I had the opportunity to do a program with Lisa, and ever since then, the last couple of years, man, just, you know, listen to a lot of what she puts out and have read a number of her books and other pieces. And, you know, I did love getting a chance to listen to your conversation with her, and was very jealous, not just to miss it, but then, you know, hearing it. I mean, just any opportunity to be with her or to, you know, have the benefit of learning from her is huge. And I think people are going to really enjoy that today.
Yeah. And we, I actually, both Lisa and Jenny Wallace, who we had on before, were part of a panel that we did with Making Caring Common in New York City. And we'll put the link to that in the show notes. But, you know, what I hope folks will listen for, and I'm not going to spoil it because I think she makes such a great point, and I want people to really listen for it. But she draws a distinction between the University of Michigan and John Carroll University. And I think it's just, she really kind of hits home a great point. So I'll encourage folks to listen for that.
Yeah, absolutely. I enjoyed that part. I guess I would say, since that, as I recall, is kind of towards the end, what I would say is, towards the beginning, I mean, two things. One, I would just say, listen for her tone throughout. It's extremely empathetic. I mean, as a parent and as a psychologist, I mean, she really does get, I think, that this is tough, man. And, you know, she talks about she and her husband kind of working with their older daughters as they went through the admission experience recently. And you can just, I just appreciated that you could hear in her voice that there's understanding and empathy and an appreciation that this is hard on families. And, you know, she gives some real cool strategies and interesting like tactics and metaphors for maybe ways to actually handle it. But I just really appreciated that it was very, again, yeah, just sort of empathetic. I guess the other thing I would say is, she does a good job, and again, this is towards the beginning, talking about her own experience and then working with her daughter on just saying, you know, things are so different now. I mean, the way that the whole calendar is set up, the cost of college, the admit rates, at least at some particular places, it just, you cannot apply the paradigm or the experience that you had to this environment today. And as parents, we're better off, and we set our kids, I think, up for more enjoyment and ultimately success if we can just kind of put that to the side and be realistic and just supportive. And I thought that she framed that really well from the outset.
Absolutely. And we're actually going to have her on College Guidance Network next month. So I hope, you know, we'll put the registration link in the show notes, but enjoy this conversation with Lisa Damore. Today, we are welcomed by Lisa Damore. Welcome, Lisa.
Thank you so much for having me.
I know Rick is really upset that he couldn't join us because he's a huge fan of yours and loved your books. And so he has other commitments, but I'm glad we had the chance to talk. And I'd love to just begin this way for all of our guests. And could you just tell us a little bit about your college mission experience? You know, where did you end up going to college and why? Any takeaways or tips you'd offer students and families based on your journey?
First of all, glad to be with you. Sorry I'm missing Rick, but it's
Yeah.
always true. I have so much respect for the work you both do.
Thanks.
Okay, so I went to Yale where I would not be admitted today. So let's just start right there. I was admitted in the fall or in the spring of 1988 when the admission rate there was 21%. It is now around 5%.
So I hear.
Yep. So, I got in when it was much, much easier. I also had a lot of family legacy. I am dripping in privilege. All of these things eased my way to Yale. And so I think, you know, it felt hard then. In retrospect, having actually as a mother had my own kid go through the college process, I appreciate how completely different the landscape is from one generation to the next around college admissions. I happen to be steeped, not like you guys are steeped in it, but like very, you know, kind of aware of the shifting numbers. And so when my own older daughter was thinking about applying to colleges, I said, look, if you want to apply to Yale, apply to Yale. You are a far better student and far better person than I ever was at your age. But your odds of getting in are basically lottery ticket odds like everybody else's. So, you know, it's your call, but you're certainly not going to get any pressure from me to apply there or any expectation that you can get in there, not because of something about you, but just because of how the landscape
is. Yale, right, yeah. And so how was that experience overall? I mean, you know, so you've just had one child go through the process?
Yeah. So I've got a daughter who's now a sophomore in college, and I have a daughter who's a seventh grader. So we'll do it again, but not, we get a little break. And the experience, Brennan, actually, it was interesting. I've been a psychologist actually 30 years at this point. When I think about where in my training I got a license, which was midway through grad school. And I have worked on adolescents for that entire time. It was not until I went through the process as a parent that I was like, oh my God, this is so hard. Like I knew it was hard. But the things I was not prepared for, I was not prepared for the sheer volume of work it created for, honestly, me and my husband. And he did most of it. Just the, you know, he was fantastic at helping sort through the that common app and mastering that and figuring it out and editing essays. I mean, he did such beautiful work. I was sort of amazed though at how involved the whole process was and how much it involved us both. And my husband has a PhD as well. We both taught college for a long time. We're both very fluent in the ways of universities. I have a university appointment. And I was amazed at how much we were drawing on that knowledge base through the process and thinking, oh my gosh, like this feels hard and complex and challenging for us. And we are both, you know, college educated and college, you know, teachers. And it still felt challenging. And so it just, my empathy for families going through this process really grew a whole lot.
Yeah. Well, that kind of, yeah, I mean, that kind of leads me to my next question, which is, you know, Rick and I kind of travel the country visiting schools and different communities, and we always kind of do an exercise, a word association exercise, where we ask parents and students about college admission, and they often respond with words like stress and anxiety, and you talk about empathy for parents going through it. Why do you think that is? Why do you think it has to be kind of shrouded in this stress and anxiety? And, you know, is there any advice you have for parents that, like, you know, how can we thrive in this experience rather than just kind of survive it or get through it?
So I think there's a certain degree of stress that's unavoidable just because it's just a lot of work. You know, I mean, to choose colleges to apply to them, you know, I mean, and then if you're doing FAFSA forms, I mean, like, it's just a lot of work, and work is challenging and it's new work and it feels, you know, unfamiliar if it's the first kid. That stress, I actually, you know, psychologists, we are very comfortable with the idea of stress. We're uncomfortable with the idea that, we don't mind that adapting to new conditions is challenging. Invariably, we grow. After taking a break from it for a few years, we're going to turn around and put this, hard-earned knowledge base to work for my younger kids. So, I mean, there's value in it. I think there's some non-negotiable stress. I do think there's some highly negotiable stress around setting one's heart on a particular school. I think that that's the thing I've seen kids and families do to themselves in a way that just is not realistic in this day and age to sort of say, like, I want to go to Princeton, right? It does not, you could cure cancer and not get into Princeton, right? So
Sure.
I think it's important to avoid that. I also, and I ended up saying to my older daughter, I was like, look, we think you should go to college. Like, there's value in going to college, but we truly do not care where you go to college. And we really meant that. Of course, by the time she's a senior in high school or a junior in high school, her own opinions and her own peer group has taken over and they're driving one another forward. But I will say, one of the things that I think is a negotiable is really kind of getting used to this idea that if you let go of the idea that your kid has to go to or should go to a very small set of highly selective colleges, then this gets a lot more pleasant, right? Because our country is overrun with fabulous schools that will accept your child. And I know and believe that. My husband knows and believe that. So I think for us, we were like, if you want to shoot for the moon, that's fine. But we're not hung up on the idea that you need to go to one of these schools. And I think that that's a place where there's some tension that can be let out of the system.
Yeah, I mean, like you, I have a lot of privilege, right? And I have two children who've gone through this experience. One's a senior in high school, one's a sophomore in college. And they, I don't know if it's just being around me and hearing things, but they both went through it and both kind of accepting the fact that they could go anywhere and be happy, right? And that their success, their ultimate success and their happiness wasn't tied to one school or another. And again, maybe that's just because they have the safety net of, being from an educated family and my experience. But yeah, I think there's danger in getting so attached to this kind of one subset of schools. And I guess, why do you think that is? Like, do you think there's, I guess since Rick's not here, we'll pick on him. I mean, what do you think colleges could do better to reduce that stress or anxiety? Or do you think that they partly feed this kind of idea that going to their school or going to one school or another is going to kind of to make or break you?
I do, and I can almost forgive it because, like, they're in a marketing job, right? Like, their job is to get people to want to buy their product. And so, of
Sure.
course, to get people to buy your product, you have to convince them that your product's better than every other product and it's going to change their lives. So I can tolerate that. I think what's hard is that kids are coming up in an ecosystem of families, schools, adults who really I think are pretty anxious about kids' futures, which I understand. I think things feel very uncertain. I think we work with the assumption that if you are economically or professionally successful, that will be what ensures your happiness at midlife. We actually know that's not the lever. We know that once you get above a certain level of income, like if you're impoverished, it absolutely harms your well-being. But once you get a comfortable margin above the poverty level, and it's not that big a number, being more successful financially or professionally doesn't make you happier. It's actually having good relationships and doing work you find meaningful and feeling good at that work, that those are the things that matter. But I think in a loving way, adults attach themselves to the idea that, like, I want my kid to grow up to be happy and secure, and that's going to involve financial or professional success. And if I backward engineer that, well, that means we're going to college, right? So I think it comes from a loving place, even if the data don't line up with those assumptions.
Yeah, and we kind of lay so much on college admission, right? Like you said, like this, I think our fear for so many aspects of our kids' futures get funneled into it.
Yeah.
I also wonder if we do our students a disservice, and I don't know if you see this at all in your research or practice, or Kind of the idea of focusing so much on purpose and passion and kind of what they are going to do in their future. And I mean, do you think we're harming young people by trying to kind of force that hand on them?
I think it's not necessarily a developmentally appropriate question to be asking, like, what's your purpose? What's your passion? And I think years ago, a dear friend of mine who wrote for the Wall Street Journal wrote an essay, not at the journal, but somewhere else, which she titled, her name is Molly Devaney. She's very smart, very funny. And she titled it, "How's my son supposed to find his purpose? He can't even find his shoes." You know, I think
I love
that kind
that.
of captured like where a lot of parents are. But it's interesting. So I feel like if your kid has a passion or a purpose, like that's fantastic. Let them write about that in their essays all day. I think there's other kids where we can say, you know what, just come up with something for now. It does not have to be, you know, true in 3 years. It doesn't have to be true in 10 minutes. You just have to write an essay. I think it's okay. I have no problem with saying, look, this is the game. Go ahead and play it. So I think that there's ways that kids get boxed into this idea that they need to know at 17 the mark they're going to make on the world, and they need to justify their existence to colleges as part of the application process. And I think I have a lot of room to be like, you know what, this is, you know, tell them what you want to tell them right now. It doesn't have to
Right.
be true forever. And I think that can take some of the heat out of it too.
Yeah, it's an evolving understanding for who you are and what you want, and I think giving some of that grace and some of that understanding that that's okay is really important for our young people. So we are right in the midst of admission decision season. I'm talking to you in March, and I wonder what advice you have for parents. I mean, you had a video in the past where I think you said, never be more happy or more disappointed than your teenager is about something that's happened for them. Can you say more about that?
So that's actually, I wish I'd thought of that. I that's an idea that's been around for a little while, but I did share it in a video about, you know, admissions. And I think, you know, we want it to be the kid's experience, whatever the experience is. And so if they get into their dream school and you're more excited than they are, I think it actually threatens to kind of get in the way of them owning that experience. And if your kid doesn't get in where they want to go, or it doesn't break their way, you know, what they need in that moment is for us to be a steady presence, you know, to help keep it in perspective and to be reassuring and to say, you know what, yeah, this one didn't break your way, but life, you know, life is long and these trajectories shift very quickly over time and you're going to thrive no matter where you go, and that's all that matters, right? I think that those are important things to say. I will also say, Brennan, I think there's something else that whenever I speak to high school students, I always try to take a moment to just say, like, okay, where are the seniors? And like, let's talk for a minute about what you're up to here. And I say to them, you know, there's something I want you to know, which is once you get to about age 25, people don't know where you went to college unless you're actually bringing up the topic.
Right.
And as savvy as many of these high school seniors are, this comes as news, that they really have absorbed the idea that where you go to college is somehow tattooed on your face forever, and everyone will always know. And my favorite thing to do when I'm having this conversation is I'll point to their faculty who are in the room and I'll say, a lot of your teachers have no idea where their dear friends and colleagues went to college. And what's wonderful is that the adults start nodding, like, that's right, actually, we have lunch together every day, and I have no idea where this person went to college because it stops coming up. So I like to tell high school seniors this because I say, once you get to 25, what's left is what you did with the college experience. So if you go to the college of your dreams, that's fine. Unless you're bringing it up at age 25, nobody knows. And really, what's going to show is how you made the most of that experience. If this does not break the way you want it to go, also, no one's going to know at 25 where you went, and what you did with that experience is actually what's going to still remain.
Well, and for parents, I think it's a good reminder too to say that in 5 years after your kid is out of college, people still aren't going to be asking where your kid went to college, right? And they're going to be asking what they're doing and what their family and things like that. I think some parents get so caught up in the idea of, the decal on the back of the car. You're going to sell that car long after the student graduates from college. So my former colleague and dear friend Bruce Burke always says, you're only as happy as your least happy kid. I love that quote. It's just I think as parents, it can be a really emotional time as we help our student kind of handle the disappointment or excitement or so.
You know, there was something else that I had happened in my professional life that really, like, I have always been of the mind, like, it really does not matter that you go to a big name college. And I believe that still, but there was an experience I had that really drove that home to me. And it's that, so I was on the faculty at the University of Michigan, in the psych department. And the University of Michigan psych department is always ranked in the top three in the country. I mean, it is just, it's a really storied and powerful and excellent, excellent department. And, you know, we all had research labs, we were all running programs, where we were conducting research. And we had undergraduates who wanted to work in our labs because they were thinking about maybe going on to grad school in psych.
Right.
So if you wanted a research job in a lab at Michigan in the psych department, you had to get in a line behind about 200 other kids and hope that you could get in, because you know there's only so many of us running labs,
Sure.
and you know there are a lot of undergrads. So many, many, many undergraduates at Michigan who wanted a lab experience could not have one. Okay. So then we move from Ann Arbor to Shaker Heights, Ohio, where I live now, and I take a position at John Carroll University, which is this wonderful, wonderful regional Jesuit college in
Yep,
my
I love
area.
it.
Lovely place. But of course, not a big name like Michigan, like by any measure. And I was actually still like very closely connected to the Michigan psych department, and I was actually comparing them in my mind sometimes. Like the Michigan psych department has 36 bathrooms and takes up a city block. The John Carroll psych department shares a bathroom with the biologist down the hall and takes up part of a hallway. It's like very different scene. But if you're an undergraduate at John Carroll who wants to work in a research lab, you get to choose basically which professor you want to work with. And I mean, I was watching undergraduates have their names on published papers coming out of the labs of the John Carroll faculty, who were taking such good care of these students, totally knew them, were able to shepherd them along. Their odds of getting into graduate school were going way, way up, because if you can get
Yeah.
in, it makes a huge difference. And I was like drop-jawed at this, Brennan. I'm like, holy moly, I just walked out of like the, you know, huge juggernaut, most powerful program in the country in psych, and I am watching the John Carroll undergraduates get a vastly better training. And of course, it's the same faculty. I mean, it's not like the Michigan faculty
Right.
or the John Carroll faculty. We all have the same training. And that for me, I was like, ho, okay. These colleges that don't seem so huge, don't seem so fancy, may actually be able to offer better training, more immediate direct care from the faculty than the schools that everybody pays attention to.
I love that. I love that. And might be more financially available, right? They might be more economical. So I think we get caught up in paying a huge price tag for some schools that, the outcome might not be significantly different. Okay, so we always ask our guests kind of what they're, those banners that if you're at the beach, the plane pulls behind the across the beach. What would be your sky banner message to parents about college admission? You can fit it on. It can be a longer banner. It
Can
doesn't
be a
have to
long
be.
one.
It doesn't have to be a couple words.
College is not the best 4 years of your kid's life. It's the next 4 years of your kid's life. I really don't love that we put that kind of pressure on kids and families, that this is some pinnacle experience that, you know, has to just go down in a very particular way. It is a chapter in a very long book that is our lives. I think we can keep it in context.
I love that. I've had a lot of good 4 years since I got out of college. Good 4 year stints. So I agree wholeheartedly.
Absolutely, Brendan. I have one other thing I want to share with your wonderful audience. So I love metaphors, and in going through the college process, I came up with this metaphor that has seemed to help some people. So I want to share it, which is when we were going through the admissions process, in retrospect, it felt like this like kind of terrible roommate moved in with our whole family. Like, and it was like the college admissions process was the roommate. And it was hard on my husband and hard on me, and certainly hard on our college kid or college applicant, but it was also hard on our 11-year-old. Like, it was she at the
Oh,
time,
yeah.
wait, why are we always talking about this? And what I found is that as the process went on, the roommate became more and more obnoxious, right? More and more demanding, took up more time and more energy, and made us all more grumpy. But I felt in retrospect, it was helpful to think about it as like this difficult third party, as opposed to trying to point fingers within the house. And then what was so beautiful is that when my daughter's decision was resolved, the roommate just m magically moved out. Like it was gone. And so I want to offer that to any families that are going through this who may feel like this is really miserable. I think it's better to like treat it like something obnoxious that has moved in. It's not that your kid is getting it wrong or your high school is getting it wrong or any of those things. And know that one day it just will magically like take all its stuff and leave.
So important. And I hope in the meantime, you have built a in-law apartment for when your younger daughter goes through it, right? So,
We're resting between.
so somewhere for the roommate to stay that might be a little less obtrusive. So Lisa, thank you so much. I'm looking forward to having you on, and speaking more with you on our College Guidance Network program in a couple weeks. And in the meantime, if people want to learn more about the work you do, some of the resources you have to offer, where should they go?
So everything is at my website. So it's
Okay.
drlisademore.com. And the things that people will find is a mix of free and some paid content. So free, I have a weekly podcast called Ask Lisa, the Psychology of
Yeah, I
Parenting.
love it.
I love doing it. I do a ton of work for UNICEF that is free. I have a huge archive of articles I wrote for the New York Times. So if you have a subscription to the Times, those are paid for. And then I have a subscription service called Untangling 10 to 20, which is just-in-time resources. Lots of videos, some which are called Dear Teenagers, where I speak directly to teenagers about challenges they face. Some that are called Untangling Family Life videos, which are longer form, how to help kids with anxiety, how to help kids find motivation at school, and some written content that's there as well.
Oh, that's great. Well, we'll put a link in the show notes. And in the meantime, I'm so grateful for you and all the work you do and taking some time to speak with me. I know Rick will be really bummed, but we'll get him back next time. So thanks
Great.
again, and be well.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we hope that you enjoyed that episode with Dr. Lisa Damore. And again, in the show notes, we have included a couple resources for hearing more from her. Just a phenomenal thought leader, as Brennan said at the jump here today. Also, this is a time, for seniors that is challenging, and for parents as well. But ultimately, I mean, I think we should just kind of come back to a little of what their conversation hit on, that in the end, what is truly success is not a bumper sticker, it's not a particular place, but it is being together and listening, being able to, again, sort of kick the admission process out of the house, and be together. And really, I think if throughout we can keep that in mind, that this is about family, and it's about learning together, it's about growing together and supporting one another. That is success. And so we hope that you've appreciated that in the conversation, and keep that in mind. We do want to also close by again thanking our season two partner, Grown and Flown. Just a phenomenal resource for parents of high school students. I know they've had Lisa Damore on a number of times as well. And their website's full of other experts, and great content on college admission and really all aspects of raising teen. They do have an affordable monthly membership called College Admission Grown and Flown for Families. We have questions about admission and how to pay for college. We've got a link to join for 3 weeks for free in the show notes, so we hope you'll check that out. And I just want to highly recommend the membership. A great place to find current and reliable advice from admission experts in weekly live sessions. They also have a number of archived pieces that you can check out when you become a member. So that would all be at a no additional charge. And we hope that you'll again explore that. Thank you so much for listening. We look forward to joining you again on another episode soon.